Well, I just think I'd feel much better about it if we could lock down a great representation visually of what my brand is.
Okay, so how exactly would you describe your brand?
It's like aesthetically or cinematographically, if that's a word.
It's not.
I feel like it's everything you loved about the classic movies of our childhood, like Sandlot, Billy Madison, Apocalypse Now, Happy Gilmore, Clueless. But at the same time, I feel like my brand is not rooted in the past. It's actually very forward-thinking and, like, mm-hmm. futuristic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, imagine, like, what 2090 is like. But, like, it's being described by someone who's from 1920.
TBTL!
So I'm what's known as a psychic medium, but I'm also clairsentient, which means that I feel my angels. I'm also clairvoyant, which means I can see. I'm also clairaudient, which is most of the time I actually hear voices. And I also do financial advising.
I'm not handling this well. I don't feel competent. I'm depressed.
It's kind of weird. I feel like I'm being interrogated, but by someone who doesn't really want to know anything important.
I like not having fun. I like your idea of fun. Our idea of fun. I like not having that.
Let's get to the jokes.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome, everybody, to a Tuesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
It's like someone punching your brain, but in a weirdly satisfying way.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Mimi!
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill. In Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Never thought I would be excited at the prospects of rain, but last night, in between watching my new Showtime sort of true crime documentary show that I like. It's called, like, Love Thief or something. So bad. I looked out the window and noticed it was raining, and I was filled with excitement because I thought it might get some of the smoke out of here. And I would say there's been a mild improvement in the air quality up here in Bellingham. Hope wherever you are right now, particularly if you're in the West, things are going okay for you. I saw a headline that some of the smoke from the wildfires has literally reached the other side of the country now. So I think we can officially say wherever you are in the contiguous United States and Canada, we hope you're doing okay with the sort of results of these fires that have been going on. We are at episode 3,250 in a collector's series.
Let the fun begin.
Holy guacamole. 250. Hold on, let me calculate it out here. Crunch a few numbers. Get an envelope out and then write on the back of it. Do you go back of the envelope or back of the napkin when you're talking about a quick calculation? I'm going back of the envelope here. 250 is 100 divided by... I think we're a quarter of the way to our 4,000th episode, everybody. Didn't we just do our 3,000th episode? We are now a quarter of our way to 4,000. That's amazing. We have a lot to talk about here on this Tuesday edition of the show, including the fact that Jeopardy, speaking of long-running and beloved programs... Jeopardy is back with new episodes hosted by Alex Trebek.
Never let me slip, because if I slip, then I'm slipping.
And it was a great episode last night, and I was tickled. I have to be honest, I really did not expect Alex Trebek, who's dealing with, you know, pancreatic cancer. I did not expect him, of all people, to be hosting a television game show in the company of other human beings during the time of COVID. But there he was, there they were, and it was really fun. I'll give you a full report on how that went. Also, Airbnb is offering you the chance to rent out the mansion from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Sounds expensive.
There are many, many caveats to this. It's actually one room in the mansion, which they're declaring to be like Will Smith's room. And also, you have to live in the immediate area. They don't want to encourage people flying in from all over God's green earth to be part of this thing. And we'll tell you what's going on with that. Plus, emails and V-mails. And, of course, we will be joined by the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. After After co-hosting literally thousands of episodes of this show with me, I think he's finally figuring out how he can be helpful to me as a co-bro.
I must hold his pain where it is. Mine does not matter.
He is Andrew Welsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
I stand by that 100%. Hey, listen, I really legit hate to do this at the top of the show. I'm going to be very pedantic here because I know what you meant. But just to clear things up, we're not a quarter of the way to our 4,000th episode. We're a quarter of the way there since 3,000. We're actually 81% of the way to the 4,000th episode. And I know that you meant, you were just thinking like we just did our big 3,000th celebration, and now we're already since then a quarter of the way to the big 4K. A quarter of the way to the big 4K. That is the theme of today.
Ooh. Never let him slip, because if he slips, then he's slipping.
No, triple rhyme.
No, that's a good that's a good clarification, and you know it would have. Well, it already the sad part is it already bothered the some number of the listeners who heard it, but now hopefully their level of frustration has dropped down a little bit because you clarified that you corrected the record. Yes, we are not a quarter of the way to 4,000. We are much more than a quarter of the way.
How does that 81% feel around your podcasting neck right now, though? 81% of the way to the 4,000th episode since you launched this thing.
Way too close. Way too close for comfort. I like to go back to my math. I don't know if science is right, Andrew, about these numbers.
That is true. Has anybody investigated numbers?
How do they work? Yeah, here we are, inching ever closer to our 4,000th episode. Now, at the rate that we're going, we about every 3 weeks try to figure this out. Do you have a sense that by the time we get to 4,000, the likelihood is that we will be back in a mode of life in the world where we can have an event?
Now, I should do some math. Have people already? No. People have done math about where we will be for the 10,000th episode.
Yeah, that's
a little overwhelming.
Distant future.
I'm really hoping that we'll be through the pandemic by that point and potentially battling another pandemic or maybe Pandemobots, which is something we might be facing there. Let's see. Can I even do this on the fly? About where will we be? I guess it'll be about a year and a half, maybe, just very, very roughly. Front of the cocktail napkin.
Oh, you use the front of the napkin. Interesting.
Yeah, I do, because the bottom is all dirty from the table and sticky.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
So you're thinking it'll be about what? A year and a half?
I'm just throwing that out there based on when it was about. I just had my employee review. Yours is coming up. Mine went well. I'm a little bit worried about you, but with your
attitude. Let me ask you a real question.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a real, because there's and at this time when everything that's going on back at Minnesota Public Radio seems to be going over great with the wider world, at a time when there's almost zero controversy emanating from the home office. Let me pull the curtain back and legitimately ask you a question. Are you on some level a tiny bit concerned about me being in a conversation with, a supervisor of ours, a colleague who probably ranks above us on the flowchart? Actually, who doesn't rank above us on the flowchart? And you're not there to possibly run some sort of interference?
No. Like, God, no.
Really? No. I am.
You're an adult. I mean, come on.
Have you met me?
Yeah, I've met you.
I am if I get my feelings just a little bit creased, I am capable of, I might call you on Thursday and tell you that we've quit.
Well, I've been laying some groundwork to make sure that I'll have other positions there.
That's really true.
I sucked up real hard in the
You told
review.
Me this. You can cut this out if you want.
No,
if I
stand by it, because I say sucked up, but honestly, it was not out
not
of character up. For me for what my how my conversation went. But yes, every review I have, I end up just saying, "Well, things are going great. Give me more work." I do it every time, and I'm sure part of it is me wanting to put my best foot forward, but also. Part of that comes from the same instinct that I have when I see a job opening for a Morning Edition job across the country, and I think I should apply for it. Like, I am sort of always in this mode of like, we should start more shows, or I should work on this, I should work on that. Like, I am that person. I know it's somewhat obsequious.
Well, you mentioned to me after you had your Thrive review, and isn't it amazing that with all of the upheaval in the world, with the, you know, I don't know what number of boss we're on now, the one thing that will never go away is Thrive.
Yeah, I know.
Like, did they pay a bunch of money for that as the, like, system, the review system that we use at this job? But you texted me after the Thrive, and you said it went great. And then you also said, but I also volunteered myself for, you know, various other jobs because – this is the part that cracked me up. You said, because I'm broken, which I thought was very funny.
Here's what happened, and I also said this to you, and it is absolutely true. This review process I went into was with somebody who's new to the organization, and I don't really know that well, so I wasn't sure what we were going to talk about. But what we immediately started talking about – It was Julie Andrews. Turns out she is above us on the chart.
That they've – I mean, honestly, it makes sense, though. Think mm-hmm. about Mary Poppins. Like, she is very good at sort of delivering tough news to mm-hmm. us, the APM staffers.
No, it is true. Her PowerPoints go on a little bit long when we have the all staffs, but aside from that
– hold on. I'm trying to understand this chart. How much of this is raindrops on roses and how mm-hmm. much of this is whiskers on kittens?
Mm-hmm. Okay, could we see that in the pie chart, please? Yeah. Oh, okay. Now I see it. Thank you. What was I going to say? Oh, the other thing that I said to you is what happens is if you want me to take on more responsibility as a radio producer, just get me talking about radio. Because turns out I'm still passionate about it. Like I started talking about, my work at KCRW and NHPR, which led to kind of my theories about radio shows and what we were trying to do then and what we should be trying to do now. And then I get all excited and I start thinking about new projects. And then I think about formats and I think about how I'm right and everybody else is wrong. And then I get all a big head of steam. And then I'm ending the conversation saying like, yeah, so we should start a million new podcasts and I should executive produce them all, right?
I also think maybe this is less what animates you. Maybe you're just in it for the love of the game. But I was talking on yesterday's show about how last week my Friday was a bit hectic, and I was thinking to myself, why do I kind of overschedule myself and take on any opportunity that seemed to be coming my way? And I think for me it's that I still on some level kind of can't believe that I get to have a job talking into a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really, really, and I've seen this in the radio industry. I've worked with folks who kind of were sliding down the hillside of this industry, and I felt like probably because of my insecurity, I'm hyper vigilant about trying to figure out when it is that I'm starting to slide. Mm-hmm. Now it's crazy. People who listen to the show, they're like, "Bro, you were never at the top of the hill. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about?" Mm-hmm. But it's just kind of like there's a time in your arc working in this business where if you get really lucky and you have the privilege that I've had, there seems to be people that are interested in what you're selling. People are like, "Hey, this is seen as something that is has some value to it." And then I think there starts to be a point where that's less the case and you become sort of a little bit less relevant, and I have always just, because my ego is so fragile, I want to be so ahead of the curve and the realization when my time is done or when I'm getting increasingly less interesting assignments or jobs or whatever, that my stress reaction to that is to constantly take on new jobs or additional work so that I have so many irons in the fire that I don't find myself in that position. I don't want to be doing, and I say this with absolute peace and love to anybody who has this job, and if it provides them pleasure, then that's great. I don't want to be doing overnight traffic reports somewhere, in a medium market town, like, because that's the last place that will let me talk into a radio microphone. And again, if somebody does that job and they like it, that's amazing. It wouldn't be fun for me. And so it's all an anxiety reaction for me. And yet I'm also 50-50 on telling them that we're quitting on Thursday. So, I mean, explain it. It makes no sense.
Don't do that.
I'm not going to. I want to mention, by the way, we're in a good spot with our management. There's not, like, issues. I'm just so sensitive.
With me, yeah.
I'm so sensitive that if somebody in a position of authority says, "Hey, why don't you consider doing this different?" It feels so life and death to me that I could have a bad reaction. And if you're not on the call – who's there to moderate old LB?
I think you're going to get out of that conversation, and you're going to be saying that you've taken on a lot of responsibility as well. Okay. I'm actually looking at the website.
I'll be your
right
hey, Andrew,
now.
Good news. I'm your new supervisor.
Oh, good. I was looking. They have right now APMG featured opportunities. They're looking for a managing editor at Southern California Public Radio. Hmm. I believe that would be KPCC.
Yeah, can you imagine a worse managing editor than me? You'd be good at
honestly,
it.
Honestly, not
you
really.
You should apply for that.
I don't think an editor. I didn't come through my through all of my work experience, I never worked with editors very much. I was never a reporter, so therefore, the whole editing process is not very familiar to me. The idea of producing a show is, and having editors maybe looking over things, but that was just not part of my experience.
I think listeners of this show can agree on one thing, is that you and I always use the fewest words possible.
No, that is absolutely true. I'm doing that now. A national account executive, sales distribution, that's based in L.A. You love L.A. I could see you taking on as well. Data engineer.
Sure. I'd love to.
That's in Pasadena.
What would I do? I'd love to nationally account.
For executives. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to nationally account some executives. Sign me up.
I'm talking a mile a minute because I want to get to one point that I started to bring up a long time ago. As I was contemplating the past year and the things that we did, the thing that sticks out most, because it was such an emotional week and in many ways a good week and a connective week with the listeners, was our June TBTL-a-thon, where we did a bunch of virtual meetups and got to talk to everybody. So that stands out, and it was the last kind of big thing we did. But I looked back at the year, and I kept on doing the math, and I thought I was wrong, but I wasn't. It was all last year. It was actually over the course of a six-week period that we did the following things. Live show at the Thing Festival in Port Townsend. Live from the Minnesota State Fair. That was 4 days later. About a week later, TBTL Summer Picnic in the park. About 3 weeks later, 2 weeks later, live from a Waffle House, 2 days later, live in Brooklyn, 2 days later, live on a boat in Seattle. That all happened. I mean, that feels like a lifetime ago, my friend. I kept thinking, like, that couldn't have all happened this year. And it's like, yeah,
happened. Do you need to take a couple days off to just recover from remembering that?
Are you making fun of me now? It was we did a lot in a very short period of time. As I said, this is potentially the busy, maybe not the most significant, but certainly potentially the busiest year of TBTL in its 12-year history as far as like getting out into the world.
Yeah, I would agree. I was not making fun of you there because I was actually slightly stunned when you listed all of those things that happened in basically like a 1 or 2 month period of time. That's a lot of stuff, particularly now. I mean, in light of how sort of little most of us are going out and engaging with the world and certainly not doing things like that. So I guess back to the jumping off point of this conversation, we are taking ideas for the 4,000th episode celebration because I have some hope that if it is a year and a half from now or whatever it is, 2 years, I am hopeful that we will be back in a mode where we can be around each other. And I, for one, look forward to it. I was texting with a friend this morning and I said, I never thought I would say this, but I kind of miss airports.
Hmm.
You know, like
I don't find that as surprising. I mean, you live there, you spend so much time at airports. There's probably very little magic left in them for you. But for me, like, I still love people watching, and you don't get better people watching than in an airport.
Well, yeah, my friend's a teacher, and they were talking about how they you know are teaching from home, but now they're going to go into the school and stand in their empty classroom and teach from the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Just to have that sense of normalcy.
Yep, I like that.
And they were saying how, like, oh, they were surprised that they, like getting up earlier than they would have to otherwise, mm-hmm. and making their coffee and then driving to work.
And waking up, yep, and all those things, yeah.
Because it's like, you know, if you don't have to drive to the school, it's like that saves you some time. All these things that we thought were the bad parts of our job, and in fact probably are if you're doing it, you know, 5 days a week over the course of years, nobody likes sitting in traffic. But boy, it's surprising how some of those rituals do provide some structure. And when you don't have them for a long time, and then you sort of jump back into it, like when I am able to finally go get on an airplane and go somewhere to do something in the media, and it's like it's safe for everybody involved, and it's not something that I have to like really, really sort of hem and haw about, like, is this worth the risk, et cetera. Like, when I just get to go down to SeaTac Airport and get on an Alaska Airlines flight and fly to Chicago and do wait in front of a group of people, that is going to be an amazingly good feeling, even though that was something that brought me great dread a mere 9 months ago.
Until the person puts their seat down in front of you. In fact, damn it, that was supposed to be one of my fake drama in real life titles.
Oh.
When airplane seats recline. I had that in there, and I think I took it out and forgot to put it back in. That was one of my favorite spoofs. By the way,
Andrew, you're already becoming a masterful editor.
You left that out. I'm already cutting chef. The date, 750 weekdays from now. Are they doing weekdays or days? Oh, this says October 4th, 2022, but I don't think they accounted just weekdays. I'm trying to figure out exactly when our 4,000th episode would happen.
Well, we do the show 247-365, so...
You know, the one thing, I don't even want to get into this. You're referring to a tweet that you wrote that said, I come to do the show with a certain amount of energy 24/7 in a tweet.
It was a picture of you from football.
But the thing is, nobody corrected you. Later on, I stumbled on the comment that you're talking about. The person who posted that wasn't correcting you or sharpshooting. They were just spoofing with you. It was.
What did they say?
I don't have it directly in front of me, but it was kind of like a fake. Well, actually, I sort of thought it wasn't like really.
Well, I didn't respond to them on. I didn't respond on Twitter. I just.
But you brought it up on the show quite a bit. I feel like
this is how I build. This is how I build the humor. I take something very small, I turn it into a thing, and then I just repeatedly bring it up over the course of weeks and months. What else are we going to talk about?
No, that is...
What else are we going to talk about 24/7, 365?
Here, let me see if
my
I got
petty
this.
Grievances.
Let me see if I got this. You wrote, this is the... So it's a photo of me from freshman football. I'm looking... Well, I'm actually on the verge of tears, but it would appear that I'm looking intense.
Did you really...
Here.
We don't need to go back down this road, but would you say you would be somewhere on the verge of tears in that photo?
Yes. This is a combination of feeling very, very self-conscious and very... And like probably a bunch of bullies or just off the frame. Like I felt like a fraud. But what you wrote is, this is the same intensity that he brings to the podcast 24/7, 365. And somebody wrote, and this is a friend of the show, someone we talk to a lot, somebody who wrote quizzes for us. This is our friend Paul in Britain, who wrote, well, 1.5/5/260 anyway. Like, that's clearly a joke. He did, like, kind of did the math about, like, when we actually do the show. Nobody was kind of like, well, actually, like, that's a joke.
Oh, okay. Well, I take it back then.
Did I really convince you, or you just not want to talk about it anymore?
No, I don't. I mean, I agree with you. I never thought I was really being dragged. I was just, you know, I was just talking, I guess. You know what I mean? There are things that happen often online where I feel like we're being sharp shot. I don't think I actually thought we were being sharp shot. I think I was just trying to be funny. Mm. But yeah, I could see it. Particularly that's coming from our friend Paul, who is a notorious jokester, a stand-up comic, even though he did he chose not to participate.
He passed on the opportunity. I'm going to call it the opportunity of a lifetime.
The TBTL. What were we calling it on the boat? The TBTL talent show?
I think we called it Live at Sea. TBTL Live at Sea. The
specific part of the show where I think we were offering people a chance to come up and do their talent or something or perform in some way. I know that we approached him and asked him if he wanted to do a tight five or something.
Yeah, and I think he said he doesn't really do tight fives, right?
Right. Yeah. Which you know, I respect that. I mean, honestly, Paul is doing the exact opposite of what I do, which is Paul is like, is this going to be a space where I can succeed? I'm across the pond. I'm on a boat. It's a bunch of people I don't really know. It's not really how my stand-up comedy works. Why don't I pass on that? I would just be like, wait, someone's paying attention to me? Let me at them.
I'm going to pivot here and tell you a little story that is weirdly dark that I would go here.
Wow.
But I wouldn't say it's a buried memory I have, because it's something I think about quite a bit. And it makes me very uncomfortable, but I'll be vulnerable and I'll share this with you. I think of myself these days as a 43-year-old gentleman as, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse, having pretty good boundaries telling people no when I don't want to do something. Like, and you know that as my friend, like, do you want to go out to do this thing, or do you want to go to a swimming hole or whatever? I'm like, nope, that is not for me. And in many cases, people know what's not for me anymore. They don't ask. And I never want it to be hurtful to people, but I'm just going to say no to things. And that goes for like things with my volunteer group. Sometimes there's some mission creep and some people will say, hey, can you do this? And I just have to say, no, I'm not comfortable with it. Like, I've done that before. And it's like, it feels like that was a journey for me to get here. But I have a memory that would kind of belie that a little bit, because I remember being like 14 years old and I was, wait for it, at a funeral. So this is one of those funny stories that happens at a funeral. And unfortunately, I don't remember who it was who had passed away. It was somebody who...
Can anyone do a passable California raisin in this room?
You know who it was? It was one of the real California raisins who had passed away early. It was, yes. And they asked me, would I do like a just a lip-syncing performance just in memoriam? And I passed
I'm sorry. That's DIP, dry in peace. Because
yes, right.
That's what happens when you're... Actually, I guess you've already been through the drying process. That's why you're a raisin.
Yeah, drier in peace. PIP, prune in peace. Anyway, I remember being at that age where I still felt very much like a kid, but I was probably a pretty big kid at this point. I was like 14, and I was probably old enough to do what was asked of me. Somebody said, hey, we need somebody to help carry the casket, a pallbearer, I guess you call it, right? Yeah. And I remember... Whoever had passed away was like, I'm going to say like an uncle or maybe even a great uncle, but somebody who I knew, but I wasn't super close to. And I can't remember why they asked me this at the last minute. It might have been because I had like maybe a family member, a generation older than me, maybe had a bad back or I don't know what it was. But they said, you know, I think my mom or my dad said, hey, you've been asked to be a pallbearer. Will you do that? And I just said, no, I'm not comfortable doing that. And I remember... Like when a kid tells you, no, I'm not comfortable carrying a casket with a body inside, you listen, right? Like nobody forced me to do it. But I do remember, and I don't put this on the adults, but I do remember just being so uncomfortable and so embarrassed and really disappointed in myself and ashamed in myself for not saying yes. And I'm bringing this up now and jamming this in here because you're kind of saying how like you have this thing about saying yes to every gig. And I don't think a pallbearing is necessarily a gig, but
I've got a bear two palls. Like four. I got one at 4 and one at 5 today. So
No. I mean, it's good money if you can get the job. But I feel like there are times in my life where I've said no to things that I shouldn't have. And some of them are even professional as well. This one, obviously not professional, but very personal. But I still feel very embarrassed about that day when I think about it. And I think what ended up happening, and again, I can't remember who is in the casket, but I believe it was my Uncle Bob, who notoriously has a bad back, who ended up saying, okay, fine, I will do it. And I just have carried this around for 30 years or 30-ish years or more. Just this weird sense of just utter embarrassment and shame because I then, you know, spent the rest of the day with these people that I said, no, I will not help at this funeral.
I bet you that it was a much... I'm not saying anything to minimize your feelings, but I bet you that it was – I bet you that the adults were not nearly as disappointed in you as you maybe thought they were or as you felt. Because like you said, if you say to a young person, hey, you know, would you be a pallbearer, which they, maybe in their mind it was also some sort of rite of manhood and sort of like, you know, you're a young man now and you can be part of this. If that young person says, nah, I don't really feel okay about that – I bet you that they were like, okay, that's fine. We'll get somebody else to do it. Like, I bet they weren't like mad at you all day or disappointed. But also there seems to be – there's no perfect amount of having boundaries or of being always a yes and or being maybe a no but. Like, because my life is really full – and this sounds like I'm trying to humble brag or be like – I don't know. My life is just full of things that I took on that were disasters. And they really weren't necessarily learning experiences. I probably try to spin them into some sort of entertainment here. But there's a lot of times where I would have been much better served to have just pulled a listener Paul and said, yeah, maybe not today. You know, when my agent said, hey, do you want to go give a keynote speech to the Oregon Banking Association? What I should have said was, I don't think I'm really there yet with this speech about being unreasonable in unreasonable times. Mm-hmm. Like, that would have just been the better decision, because even though, again, now it's become kind of lore on this show and it was funny, it was a very, very emotionally, or maybe emotion is the wrong word, but it was really embarrassing. Like, mm-hmm. it was a really embarrassing thing to be a part of. I think about being a kid, my Aunt Mary Lou and Uncle Mike were getting married in Philly, and they asked me and my sister to sing a song. I was probably like 8 or 9. And I remember being so nervous, just having the worst stomach ache all mm-hmm. the morning of the wedding, because there it felt like there was 1,000 people at this wedding. It was, I mean, it was a pretty big wedding. I don't know, probably 500 people or something. But like, I remember standing up there. I believe the song was "Always Be True, Always Be True, Be True to the One Who You're Married to, Love Her Like No Other in All That You Do, Love Her Forever and Always Be True." And then my sister Liz sang the quote unquote girl part of it, which was the same thing, but changing the gender of the other person. And I remember my knee, almost like as a kid, feeling like I was going to pass out. Mm-hmm. I remember my knees involuntarily shaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a bad job because I was so nervous, and it wasn't pleasant. And I got through it, but I don't know if that was like, it would have never occurred to me to be like, no, I don't want to do that. But I don't think I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm trying to say is, what I'm trying to do, number one, is center myself in the story, if possible, in your story. But also just to say, like, yeah, maybe there's been some times where you could have taken on something and you didn't. But there's also lots of times I've taken on something and I legitimately wish I hadn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something in it so vague. I won't even go into detail because I don't have the details. But I remember, I had mentioned on the show that I always worked for my dad, my professional career. Like, I had a lot of responsibilities. I think it was a pretty good upbringing. But like, I worked my way through a lot of different positions at my dad's, steel fabrication shop stuff, outside cleaning. I mean, literally cleaning bathrooms, to separating steel, to cleaning machines, to eventually coming inside and doing like a lot of paperwork and kind of managing a kind of industrial library thing they had. Anyway, a lot of good experience, but it always did kind of nag me that I had no outside experience from, my family's place of work, right? And I got my first experience doing that, I believe my maybe senior year of high school, maybe it was my first summer of college, and I came back to Cleveland and I got a internship at this production company. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do with my life, but I knew it involved pushing buttons in some way, whether it was camera buttons or video buttons or audio or whatever. And so this was kind of a for-hire production company that would do, mid-range work for companies. And I got this internship, and this is the one, by the way, where the original "Oh, Andrew" moment came. Like, I never mm-hmm. really felt like I was part of the gang, and I felt like an outsider. And the "Oh, Andrew" moment was when they surprised me. The entire staff surprised me with a going away party
funeral.
when I thought none of them knew who I was. They asked me, "Will you carry this?" They surprised me with a casket and said, "Will you carry this?" I said, "I'd prefer not to. I real Bartleby the Scribner'd it.
Never see any of you again."
That's right. I said, "I probably will never see any of you guys again." And somebody in the back said, "Oh, Andrew." Anyway, my point of this story, though, was I remember them kind of giving me an assignment near the end, and I somehow passed on it. I just said, "Eh, no," or I didn't show up. And I think there I was exploring my boundaries a little bit, because all of my other friends had bullshit jobs where they didn't work for their parents and they could simply lie and say, "I'm not coming in today. I feel sick." Mm-hmm. And I think I wanted to try that on. I think I wanted to, because I couldn't do that. If I told my dad I was sick, I wanted to fake it. Well, then I had to fake it all day. I had to be home when he was there. I think I wanted to try this. Like, hey, I'm working.
It was more work to pretend that you were sick than to just go to work if it was related to your dad's business.
Exactly. And so I just have this vague memory of like blowing off something, and that would have been my last kind of assignment with this organization, and I just sort of felt like, oh, I guess I'm petering out, which might have been why that going away surprise party hit me even harder, because I thought that like I was just going to kind of disappear and nobody would even remember that I had been there. I wouldn't even have left like a footprint. And I remember blowing something off, and again, this might have to do with the way I was raised with like a pretty strong work ethic. I just remember, I mean, still for years, I still have this weird sense of guilt around my last couple of weeks at this gig that matters not at all, but to me is a reflection of me being, of just like punting away something that I should have taken more seriously.
Can I ask a quick question about Walsh Manufacturing. Mm-hmm. Did your dad's company, did you guys ever like manufacture like, I guess what would you call it, like threaded, you know, like bolts and things, like large bolts for maritime or other industrial things? Like, basically, did you guys take something and make it so that it was threaded and then it could fit into something else and thread it in there?
I don't think so, no. Used a lot of pipe fittings and stuff, but no threading. Where are you going with this?
Well, when I was hosting the Virtual Wooden Boat Festival last weekend, they were showing a number of different films, and one of them was about this foundry in Port Townsend where they, you know, do all kinds of stuff with metal. And I was just watching this video, and I think I made this joke on the broadcast. I said it's like ASMR for your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything more satisfying than watching through this industrial process them take this big, like, you know, sort of inch in diameter, like I would call it like a metal dowel that's like bent into a ring on top, and then threading it, running it through some kind of lathe that actually creates these threads, and then they do the reverse process for this other part that it's going to screw into, and then eventually it all screws together like perfectly to go from just the raw materials to that sort of that joinery happening. Mm-hmm. It was so oddly satisfying. I was thinking of you when I was watching. I was like, was this what it was like to work at Walsh Manufacturing? Because I would have been into it.
I'm on the Walsh Manufacturing website right now. Of course, you know, it still is a company. My family is not involved with it anymore, but they sold it as is, so it still does exist with the same logo. They don't have any videos. I was really hoping they might have a video of, like, a conveyor belt cleaning system, but mostly what they still make are these industrial cleaning systems for parts that are, you know, used in different parts of the production processes for various objects that you might later buy in a store. But I don't see any good videos of them, like, showing these things, like, riding along a little belt and then getting blasted with steam and then, you know, getting dried off later.
You would be amazed at how much of TikTok is industrial processes.
Mm.
Yeah, like, I don't know if that's come up in your algorithm. And again, I know we both said yesterday we're like kind of low keying the TikTok, but like just there, or maybe it's just what I tarry on, I'll let play out. A lot of times it's like either some sort of like a hydraulic press that just smashes things.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, hey, what's it look like when? What's it look like when a stack of 20 CDs gets smashed? A lot of them are from other countries. Like, it's very interesting. The places that are, I guess, like slightly less industrialized, or maybe their industrial systems are not always as sort of advanced as like in the U.S. So places like India, sometimes you'll just see the work that people are doing and the way. I was watching this one where this guy was making soles for shoes out of old tires, and he had what was basically like a waffle iron, but in the shape of like the cutout or whatever was, you know, for the sole of a shoe. And he would take this rubber that was from tires and put it in, and it was so superheated and hot that it would melt the rubber into its most liquid form, and then suddenly it would just be the two soles of the right and the left sole of a shoe. And I was just watching it, just like, this is just so nice to look at, this process.
I haven't gotten into a lot of them, but I know a lot of food processes are like that too, right? Like seeing Oreos being made or the like.
Mm-hmm.
Those are bouncing around.
Speaking of processes, we need to actually respect the process of taking a break here.
Yes, we do.
Because we're long overdue. But when we come back, I'll give you a full report on last night's Jeopardy. And then also I'll interrogate why, for some reason, Will Smith is always on my last nerve, even though I think he'd probably be the kindest and greatest guy to be friends with, which is that's an important thing in the world. I bet you the way Will Smith moves through the world is exemplary, and yet for some reason I was always mildly annoyed by him. So anyway, we'll talk about all that coming up on TBTL.
Thank you, baby.
Oh, we've got donors each day.
Thank you, baby.
247-365, and we'd like to thank them for keeping the show in business. Today, our minds turn towards the work of Christina and Wayne Kirkendall of Mill Creek, Washington, as well as Brandon Lucian of Milton, Washington, Matt Menning, also checking in from Chicago, Illinois. And then Jeremy Merrill is in Des Moines, Iowa. I would say two time zones away from Erica Mittendorfer, who's in Seattle, Washington. Although I will tell you what, a last name like Mittendorfer would really fit in Iowa.
You used to
spend a lot of time in Iowa. There was like a lot of Mittendorfers out there. That could very well be. Maybe Erica's people came originally from Iowa and then headed out to Seattle, Washington. And we also have to thank Carolyn O'Donnell of Colchester, Vermont. Have you ever been to Colchester, Vermont? Do you think I'm saying that right?
I think you're saying it right. I know that you're cautious because it's one of those New England towns, and New England towns, it's like, no, it's pronounced Cooster.
Yeah.
I regret that.
I don't.
But I'm pretty sure that Colchester is Colchester. I don't know if I've been there. I didn't spend as much time in Vermont as you might think. It's very exciting when you just drive a half hour and then cross a border, and you're like, whoa, I'm in another state. But didn't end up spending a lot of time in Vermont. Just crossed the border back and forth, back and forth.
I spent a little time in Burlington, Vermont once, and it was just absolutely delightful. Like, I was doing a TV story about cheesemongers, and we went out to the person who won this competition, this cheesemongering competition, worked at a shop out in Vermont, and that was my first time out there. Even though I had lived in New York, I had lived relatively close to Vermont and never been there, but it is very, very pretty. And to this day, I get emails from the, like, Hampton Inn in Burlington, Vermont, or whatever. I somehow stupidly gave them my, like, my email address when I was checking in. It's weird, just the, like, I'm not even talking about national brands, but just the random one-off, like, organizations, whether it's a charity you may have donated to, or a hotel you may have stayed in, or even a restaurant that you, like, picked up to go from. There are just these like, some places, you know, they send out a thing once every 6 months. And then there's some places that every single week I get an email from the whatever that hotel is in Burlington, Vermont, checking in to see how I'm doing. And I'm like, I'm good. This is probably more interaction than we. It's like somebody just they're just setting. Maybe it's their social media person. They're just extra excited.
Yeah. And it's always interesting when you finally unsubscribe from one of those things and you're like, what took me so long?
Right.
I can't think of any specific examples off the top of my head right now, but I know that I have them in my life. I also have a separate email account. I don't think you have this. Like, I have my main email account that I use for almost everything. I have a work account that I kind of keep an eye on. Ooh, actually, I need to keep an eye on that. I think for some reason I stopped getting updates on my phone on that, which means I might be missing important stuff. And then I have like an email account that was my very, very first email account that I kind of use as my, you know, if I'm going to sign up for something, I'll use that one. And then, you know, years later, I'm still getting these emails from companies just, hey, just checking in. Want to let you know where we stand with our COVID policies. I'm like, but I don't live in that state anymore.
I have a burner account, like a burner Gmail, and I actually was looking for some. I was looking for an email the other day, and I thought, oh, maybe it went to that weird Gmail account that I've now forgotten to use, you know, for a number of these things, which is why there's a certain, like, bleed through. And I went into that account, which I hadn't looked at in months, and it's all emails from, like, Donald Trump for president. Mm-hmm. Like, are you coming to D.C.? And I'm like, what in the. How did this end up? It's not even my real name, this account. It's like a totally just silly made up thing. And I don't know how it got on some kind of Trump thing, but it's literally just hundreds of emails from the like Trump organization or some reelection, you know, campaign thing.
I'm so glad you brought this up. There's something I've been wanting to talk to you about. I know it's not in our top stories, but let me squeeze this in really quickly. Have you – now, you're on Twitter a lot more than me. You have a lot more followers than me, so getting followers is probably less of a – it probably doesn't stand out to you as much. But I have, for the past, I'm going to say 3 weeks, have gotten such an increase in people following me. And I know some of these people, while they look very – and I don't mean it's like a flood. I mean like one or two – a day, which isn't tons, but I'm not doing anything on Twitter that would be attracting them, right? It's not like I'm sending out a tweet and then it's getting a lot of interaction and then I'm getting some people being like, oh, hey, Walsh is this guy. I'm going to follow him. It is so clear that out of the blue, I'm just getting followed by somebody who looks like a real person, but I know like it'll be a normal name with the number one after it. And in a lot of cases, they've just started their Twitter account in September. And there's nothing specifically, red flag about their content on some of them. But it's just clear that this is something that has just been created, yet it doesn't have that total like eggshell like bot kind of vibe to it, like clearly trying to imitate somebody. And also, I have been followed by people who are very clearly conservative, and not that we don't have any conservative listeners. Like I know some of them who follow me and will interact from time to time, but like real Trumpsters will suddenly follow me. Have you experienced any of this? I have seen so much more activity like this in the past 3 weeks as we get closer to the election. It's so maddening.
I don't think I have, actually. Every once in a blue moon, if I have a tweet and it starts to get more attention than normal, there you may get a few hop-ons. Mm-hmm. I'll like very occasionally get somebody who, if I look at their profile, it's like, you know, they're MAGA. I mean, it's like it's honestly happened 5 times in the last 6 months. But even one, I'm like, ugh. But I don't think I have not been, for whatever reason, my account doesn't seem to have been the target. And you think these are obviously just bogus accounts that are there to sow confusion and discord.
I think so. Like, and it's unclear exactly what the end game is. But for example, and maybe this is a real person, and that's fine. But like the last, I don't know if this is the last one, the first one that's popping up here, if I'm trying to go chronologically, if this is a real person who's a listener, please, you know, email me, let me know, or hit me up. But I don't think that Humberto Botts, who joined in August of 2013.
Botts?
B-A-T-Z, although that is funny. I didn't even think of that until I said it out loud. He did join in 2013, so this account's been around for a while, but he looks like an older gentleman, probably in his mid to late 60s, and every single tweet is in Spanish. He only kind of tweets and interacts in Spanish. This person might be a TBTL listener and wants to follow. Oh, and then there's a really dirty photo just mixed in the middle of these. Like, this is
a real person.
I don't think so. This person just started following me. They joined in September 2020. Sierra Barsotti. Actually, though, maybe this person is a real person. It's just hard to say. You look at the photo of her and presumably her partner. They look like people who could be in the TBTL action to kind of fit our demo, but just created an account this month. Maybe she's real, maybe she's not. But I have, again, about one or two of these a day now, and a lot of them just do not stand up to scrutiny at all.
I had a thing happening for a while, which was I would get followed by accounts that were clearly people who, if they were real, I guess they were definitely, sex workers, or they might have just been bots that were, you know, featuring, you know, sort of attractive women so as to get the attention. But I can say really and truly that's not a side of Twitter that I engage with at all, really. Like, it's just – although it is funny because there are some people, and I don't want to call anyone out, but there are people I follow who regularly – they just regularly retweet those accounts or interact with those accounts. Mm-hmm. And it's like – it's interesting to me the dynamic when it is a man who I happen to know or follow on Twitter, and almost everything they retweet is, you could put it in the category of like hot girl who's 20 years younger than them. Like, those are the main accounts they interact with, which is everyone involved. That's their choice. They all get to do it. But for a while I kept having these like weird like retweets from either bots or I guess they were probably bots, but it was stressing me out because I was like, I hope that this is not subtly sending the signal to the wider Twitter world that this is like my secret jam, that I'm, you know, out there again. And if some people want to hang out on that side of Twitter, by all means, go for it. That's just not where I tend to spend my time. And I think it was maybe kind of like what you're going through with these Trump bots, of just like somehow my account got hoovered up into some kind of some sort of algorithm and or bot project that just decided to hit me with a lot of those. Thankfully that has now stopped. So, things are back to normal.
I'm sorry, I realize that this can get really boring really quickly, but for example, like I stumbled there because I mentioned that looking at this person who followed me, whose name is Sierra, I was like, oh, you know, looking at this photo, these people seem to fit my demographic. They haven't tweeted at all, but also the account was just created in September of 2020. Hey, this could be a TBTL listener who heard us talking about things we've been doing on Twitter and decided to see what's going on over on Twitter and created an account. But I see the person who started following me before that just a couple of days ago, someone who goes by the name Jameson. Everything about the account looks fine, like various tweets on various things, nothing super inflammatory. But also just joined Twitter September 2020 and one has 8 followers. One of them is our friend Sierra, who just started following me and just created her account in 2020. Like, I think that, and again, I don't know what the end game is because there's nothing offensive about either one of those accounts. Yet I just find it hard to believe that both of these people just joined Twitter and started following me.
Yeah, those are probably not real people. I find it actually quite charming. I can hear in your voice a low-key concern. Actually, I'd put it more medium-key concern that these are real people who are going to be offended.
Sierra one kind of got me for a second. I was like, oh wait, you look like, but yeah, no, I clearly they're
but
not.
But like, I would be, yeah, and maybe they're, I don't understand how this stuff works, but maybe the idea is that, you know, whatever this project is to try to, again, sow confusion on social media around the upcoming election, maybe it's just the idea is you deploy a bunch of these things. They're just kind of hanging out. Like, they don't come in. If they were smart and they were writing a bot, it wouldn't literally, like, just fire in hot.
Yeah,
with
exactly.
With the most noticeable sort of gross takes. It's just, like, kind of hang out there for a month or two, and then at some point they activate them, and then they start. And then suddenly there's just this, like, feeling of, like, yeah, you know, a lot of people are talking about Hillary's health.
Right,
you know?
right, exactly.
I don't want to. I don't want to go down this road. So I guess I won't. But man, it is a real part of why I was previously looking at so much TikTok was because it was a mostly kind of a not exclusively, but largely apolitical. At least the stuff I would look at. You know, a lot of people just cleaning swimming pools and things that don't really have an R or a D after their name. And by the way, I don't really like it when people are like, I just don't even want to engage with politics. I'm just trying to engage in a way that is strategic. And so I watch Chris's show every day, Chris Hayes' show, All In, because I just think he does an amazing job of sort of taking the important things and breaking them down and making them so my small brain can understand them. I read the major newspapers. I mildly engage with Fox's website, I guess, just to kind of see what's being said over there, how it's being interpreted. But yeah, like this morning, it's like I'm reading the Washington Post and they have this opinion piece about which it was so hard for me to read. And it's, of course, it's written by a Reaganite. It's written by a conservative person who's like a never Trumper who now says they're going to vote for Trump because or they might vote for Trump because they're worried about law and order, because they're worried about the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez takeover of the Democratic Party, and that Joe Biden is just going to be a figurehead. And it's like, I read an article like that, and I don't think it represents a statistically significant number of people. And it's like the Washington Post, probably because they don't want to just like – they don't want to seem like they literally have completely given up on trying to present both – quote-unquote both sides. Mm-hmm. They'll like let one of these opinion pieces in. But it can just ruin my whole day. Mm-hmm. It can ruin my entire day to read this in the morning and think, is that a lot of people? Are there people who didn't vote for Trump last time but now are that worried about quote-unquote riots that they're going to – like, is that moving the needle? And then I got to go read like Nate Silver, and then Nate Silver never gives me what I want to hear because he's so probably gun-shy after the – you know. After the last after the Hillary election, even though it turns out they weren't wrong, it's just, you know, it turns out that if something's within the margin of error, it can go in a lot of different directions, you know? So I don't know where I'm going with this other than to say, I got to stop reading things like I did in the Post this morning because it really just didn't help me in my sort of mental state today.
Let me go on this for 1 second. Something that was notable. I almost mentioned this in the no point conversion yesterday because it's tangentially football related. So for those who weren't following our fascinating no point conversion content. Football came back this week, and you know, the Browns were playing Sunday at 10 a.m. And I was streaming that game. I was in media blackout because I was recording a different game. Either way, the Browns start performing really, really just terribly, just like really embarrassingly so. And so I'm getting crabby. But also in the back of my mind is this feeling of I shouldn't be doing this. Like I'm sure if I was watching the Seahawks game at that time where the Seahawks were playing really, really good, fun, enjoyable football when you're rooting for them, maybe my maybe my guilt over associating with this this product would have been lessened. But just like the awkward attempts at signaling unity from a league that has been on the wrong side of history for at least 4 years now when it comes to Black Lives Matter and Colin Kaepernick and all of these social issues, and the fact that I just keep on being, you know, I'm still addicted to this product that I in so many ways despise the people behind the product. And so, and then I'm watching my team, then, you know, the addiction brings me back so that I can watch this team and have a terrible experience watching it, and then I hate my team and I hate everything. I'm in a terrible mood. And then the Trump commercial comes on. I don't even know what I'm watching at first. And I didn't see when I actually saw a Biden commercial during the Seahawks game. I don't know if that's telling or just coincidence. But I'm watching the Browns game and suddenly a commercial comes on. And it's one of those kind of classic B-roll kind of shots of medicine bottles on a conveyor belt going by really quickly. You know, kind of like that industrial porn you were talking about a second ago, Luke. That satisfying a bunch of things going by quickly on a conveyor belt. But you see that they're bottles that say COVID, coronavirus, vaccine, really big. And suddenly I'm just like, wait, what am I watching? And then, of course, what?
Oh, it's
and
the COVID you, factory.
You suddenly listen to it, yeah, where they make the COVID vaccine. It's the COVID vaccine. You're seeing all of these little bottles that say coronavirus, COVID vaccine, really big, coming off a line. And suddenly, it catches my attention, and the voiceover is like, "As we come so close to developing, or while we're on track to have a vaccine in no time, you know, and the economy is getting better." It's a Trump ad, and it's like, why would you vote for Joe Biden? And then you see all of the businesses closing again. But like for me, it was so weird and shocking that like the commercial is just showing fake vials of just something that doesn't exist. And if you're just casually paying attention, you just see this image of here we are. It's 2020. Thank God Trump is in office, because look at all of these vials of a vaccine coming off of a conveyor belt. There's no vaccine. And the, I mean, it's obvious. This administration has done everything possible accidentally and on purpose to put us in a position where we aren't even working with the international scientists to create a vaccine. Like they're against our interests in so many ways, but they just show B-roll, fake B-roll of a vaccine coming off the line, and people be like, yeah, we can't vote for Joe. It just made me, I almost turned off the TV. I mean, again, my team was losing. I was in a bad mood. I felt guilty for going in for this product, and then seeing a Trump commercial in front of me and knowing that probably the vast majority of my Browns loving colleagues are probably voting for Trump, it made my head want to explode.
Yeah, those are it all has to do, I think, with the where you're at emotionally on a particular day when you see one of those things or read like an article like I read or see that ad that you saw. Some days it just kind of bounces off of you and you're just like eyes on the prize. Everybody vote early. Everybody get your ballots in, you know, do what you got to do. And this is going to be OK. And then some days it's just honestly feels like, well, we said yesterday was existential dread Monday.
Yeah.
Some days it can really just really take you to a dark place. Let's take things to a arguably less dark place by talking about Jeopardy, which is back, baby, starring one Alex Trebek. I have to admit, the other day, our friend Ken Jennings, the news came out that he is now a consulting producer on Jeopardy. Mm-hmm. And I, for all the world, figured that this was just the beginning of Ken Jen becoming the new host of Jeopardy, which I was, you know, pretty excited about. I think he'd be really good at that job. And I assumed it was because Alex Trebek, who has been battling cancer and is not young, take the cancer out of it, he's just not a young guy, was probably going, I think I muttered aloud to nobody, maybe the pets, Alex Trebek has probably filmed his last episode of Jeopardy. Like, that just would have just felt like probably what was happening, because I figured it would be a long, long time before they came back and actually did new shows. But Last night, they had a new show. Alex was hosting. He was his genial self. They had the contestants a few feet apart. Not actually 6 feet, which was kind of weird. It was like 4.5 feet. They had, you know, just a regular thing. Of. I don't think they had a live crowd there, obviously, live audience. But otherwise, I mean, you know, they cut to the audience once every, I don't know, 2 months. So it's like if you hear clapping, it just feels like Jeopardy. And Alex was there, and he seemed to be in good spirits. It was a fun game. It was close. A person who was not winning going into Final Jeopardy won, which is always like that's like a you know, that's like a Hail Mary happening in their world. So that was exciting, and it just made me so. It was one of those things I said to you, I think on the No Point, how just like football happening and the football highlights just running on ESPN, it had a calming effect on me again. With the caveat of all the things about football that you and I both acknowledge are really wrong. And I felt the same way last night, just watching a new episode of Jeopardy being hosted by Alex Trebek. It just gave me hope for the world.
Mm-hmm. And how did he look hearty?
He looked fine. Yeah, he looked, I mean, you know, he looked, I guess, like he looked a little bit, I would say maybe like he had a little bit more weight on him, actually, than normal. But my guess would be, as a non-doctor, I should probably speculate on Alex Trebek's course of treatment. My guess would be that they have him on some kind of a steroid or other thing related to his treatment, which can, you know, kind of just give your face a little bit of a different look. But I mean, honestly, he looked hale, he looked hearty. He was hosting, you know, hosting the show with as much vigor as ever. And I was so happy about it. I also noticed that I think a lot of other people got the same. We could actually just ask Ken. I could just text him probably. But I think a lot of other people got the same idea that I did, because after they announced that Ken Jennings was going to be like partnered with Jeopardy now, kind of like in a permanent formal way, then he had to do a round of interviews explaining he's not the new host of Jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was a story in the Washington Post, I think, that was like what Ken Jen. Wants you to, like, you know, what Ken Jen is hoping people aren't thinking is happening. Mm-hmm. Like, suddenly the story became him having to go around and mention to everyone that Alex Trebek is still very much the host of Jeopardy, and that he is not, this is not, that doesn't mean he's the new host, just means he's going to start working with them a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd heard that as well, and I thought the same thing. Now, we've asked him several times on this show. Like,
and he's lied to us to our face.
He's lied to us about so much. Like, you know, would you consider it? Are you being considered for the role?
I consider him the Kaylee McInerney of talking about that show. Is that
Who's
her name?
Kaylee McInerney?
I think that's the new... That's the new Trump spokesperson.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he said that no, he wouldn't take the job, and he isn't being considered, and that's just not the way those things work. But we'll see.
Yeah, I do think that if it ever came down to it, I think he'd be great for that job. And maybe part of it is, again, I don't want to. By the way, it's McInerney. Not McInerney. Mm. She bears no relationship to our good friend Nora McInerney. Those mm-hmm. are different last names, and I think it's important to point that out. But yeah, not that I – honestly, as long as Alex Trebek has the strength to keep hosting this show – and again, it's amazing to me that he's still doing it, because from all accounts, you know, I mean, he has managed to – live longer than is often the prognosis for pancreatic cancer, and he has really overcome a lot sort of physically to be there. And some of the stories of what he has to do, because they'll tape like 4 or 5 of those episodes in a day, and what he has to do to sort of sometimes get through the tapings is really intense. You know, him talking about lying on the floor backstage and just being kind of completely and totally drained. It's just like, I don't have that in me, man. I'll tell you what, were I in his shoes, I would not be working this hard when you don't need the money. But again, that's the difference. That's why he is one of our greatest living talk show or game show hosts and entertainers, and why I am doing a radio show in a room for nobody.
There's no money in that. I disagree with you, though. We have this little friendly argument every, you know, few months. You say, oh, I wouldn't do that, but I think everything I know about you is you would. And, you know, you work a lot of jobs right now, and I know that you think you what you just said about Alex Trebek is, well, he's probably comfortable enough that he doesn't need to do it for the money anymore. But I mean, everybody can, not everybody, but you could live a lifestyle that you could probably lose a gig or two, Luke, and still be a happy person. But you, there's something that drives you to always say, I mean, we just had a whole conversation about saying no to things. I mean, I don't think that you're going to get the nod. But if somebody said, hey, everything you read about hosting Jeopardy sounds hard, right, Luke, but we need somebody to do it this week. Will you do it? Yes. And then, hey, will you come back next week? Next thing you know, you're hosting Livewire. I mean, Jeopardy.
But if I was, and again, none of this is me saying that I think there's anything like Alex Trebek is making a mistake at all. I find it totally impressive. I just feel like if I was his age and if I was battling the health stuff he's battling, I don't know if I would have it in me to go down to, you know, the Sony studios in Culver City, California, and grind this thing out. But I'm sure for him, it's probably part of what he lives for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I feel like the difference is, although I don't know, I mean, who knows how you'll react until you're in a situation, but I admire it greatly because I don't know if I would do it at that age, at that, you know, stage of illness, but he's doing it. And I'll tell you what made me so happy last night, to see it on television. It was a little dose of normalcy that I very much needed. Have you been following any of this Airbnb stunt stuff that they've been doing?
No, none at all.
Well, I guess like a little while ago, a couple of months ago, actually it might have been last year, they offered up a chance to stay in the last Blockbuster video. It's in Bend, Oregon.
Oh,
well, now
okay,
it's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. I guess the building is still there. It still says Blockbuster. But famously, there was a Blockbuster video in Bend. It was the last video store, or the last Blockbuster, I should say. And they did this stunt where you could rent out the Blockbuster. They listed it as like a one-bedroom. And then they had built this like set inside the Blockbuster that was like I think it was kind of a 90s-themed, like your room might have been when you were a kid renting videos.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're doing it again with the actual mansion that they was the, I guess, exterior shots of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And it's $30 a night, which, you know, is pretty reasonable. It's one room in the mansion. The mansion's not in Bel-Air, by the way. It's in Brentwood. And you can only actually the whatever you want to call it, the listing goes live at 11 a.m. On September 29th. Presumably, like, the site will crash because everyone will be trying to get in there and get their reservation. And it's $30, which is clearly pretty cheap. But you have to be kind of in Southern Cal. You can't be flying in, I guess. And it's just a marketing stunt. And I give them a credit for thinking of a creative marketing stunt, honestly. Like, if they're going around and taking these iconic ideas and then turning them into something that gets coverage, I mean, that's kind of what their job is in the marketing department of Airbnb. For whatever reason, the Will Smith piece of this was a little bit kind of eye-rolly for me. So Will Smith was apparently, I mean, he's, of course, they've like, wisely, they've decided to pay Will Smith some amount of money to promote this on his, I think his Instagram feed and his other socials. So it's like, you know, he is in the person of being the Fresh Prince, you know what I mean? Like, he's in the character.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, there's these rules around staying in this house. I'm just reading, by the way, from this was an article by Natalie Compton in the Washington Post. Up to two people can stay in the bedroom of, quote, Will's wing of the mansion, which, of course, is a room. I'll also point out that there's no way they filmed anything in the interior of this house, like, ever, right? Like, that's not how sitcoms work. They had the outside of the house they filmed, and then there was a soundstage somewhere with, you know, multiple cameras set up, and then that would be where they filmed all, like, the living room of their house, the kitchen, all of that stuff was a stage somewhere. It was not shot in this house. But up to two people are allowed to stay in Will's wing of the mansion. The Banks family won't be on site to lay down the law, but if you're staying under their rules, you got to follow, or under their roof, you got to follow their rules. For example, no pets, and only two people can stay at the mansion per booking. Now, this is from Will Smith's, because Will Smith was the person behind the listing. Well, I love a good soiree. Friends cannot stop by during your stay, Smith said in his listing. While my uncle has a strict no parties policy, don't forget to have fun. There is something about Will Smith, adult person, what is he, probably like 50 maybe or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm guessing 50. There's, I'm going to guess 51, then I'm going to look it up.
There's something about Will Smith, colossally rich.
51, my God, I'm good.
Colossally rich, 51-year-old, beloved entertainer. What I'd say top 10, maybe top 5 most beloved entertainers in America. There's something about him sliding into the role of his teenage self, talking about his Uncle Phil having a no parties policy, mm-hmm. so that Airbnb will pay him whatever they're paying him to be part of this. And I'm just like, I don't know why, but it's just the nerdiest thing. Oh, not even nerdy. It's just like, there was something about him pretending to still be in that character and writing from that perspective that, again, you couldn't pay me enough if I were Will Smith and as rich as he is and as accomplished as he is to pretend to be teenage Will Smith talking about no parties because my Uncle Phil's a real strict one.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on whether or not the money was green, whether or not I would do it. Like, I mean, it sounds what? Like if you had a certain amount
to pay him with blue money.
That's what I mean. Like, if it's a simple ask of him, but he can get like a pretty big haul on it, like I would probably debase myself more than that, frankly. I mean, I don't know for sure. I also say no to people too much, as we discussed earlier. But here's the deal. I think I was on your side of this argument not all that long ago, as we were talking about kind of Will Smith and how he's just such a nerd, and I don't know, kind of annoys me. And that summertime rap is, I just think, so corny and so bad. Listener Abney sent me this link because I think we were talking about Will Smith or Willennium. Let me see if I can find it. She said, I'm way behind. I've recently listened to the episode where you discussed your dislike of Summertime by Will Smith. I thought you might be interested in watching this YouTube video where he discusses the development of that song. And I'm not going to play it here because I don't know how well it'll translate, and I'd have to like kind of cue it up. It happens like, I don't know, somewhere in this 14-minute video. But I was watching it yesterday before the show, and it's this video of Will Smith Skyping with Jeff and a buddy of his, Charlie Mack, who's mentioned in
some
of his songs.
You mean DJ Jazzy?
DJ Jazzy, yes, sorry. I know him as Jeff. I mean, I guess to the outside world, maybe you'd know him as DJ Jazzy Jeff. But anyway, I found him to be really charming. They were kind of
course.
And then Snoop Dogg hops on the line at one point, and they're talking, and he's like talking about how mad. He's like, I was so whatever Snoop's first record was, which I should know. That's a very
Doggy
iconic,
Style.
Yeah, I guess it was Doggy Style. Yeah. He's just like, I was so mad at that. I was calling Jeff. I was like, why are you not creating beats like these? I was like legit mad that your album was out, and like there was something very charming about this Skype call that kind of won me over. And this was just yesterday before the show. I was kind of randomly watching this thing that Abney sent in, and I was kind of like, oh, I'm coming around on Will Smith.
See, this is the thing. This is the dissonance in my brain. And at the top of the show, I said, actually, I don't know if I said this before we started recording or when we were actually rolling, but it's like if I could be friends with any. Like, if I could be friends with anyone, I'm going to go ahead and say Will Smith is part of the hip-hop community. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's my job to define who is or isn't in the hip-hop community. But if I could be friends with anyone in the hip-hop community, I'd put Will Smith near the top of the list. Will Smith is a guy that would friggin' help you move. Will Smith is a guy that would just, like, be there for you. Like, if you had a problem and you text him, like, hey, can we talk? He'd be like, yeah, man, what do you – like, let's talk. Like, Will Smith seems like such a deeply good human being. And I bet you is more self-aware than I think. And like, so I, on the one hand, I have so much like admiration for the guy as a human being, but then he does like, I imagine him writing this Instagram ad or this, whatever it was on Airbnb. I literally imagine him wearing the hat from the intro of the Fresh Prince, flipped up with the bill up. You know what I mean? I just imagine him wearing that and just being like, well. But I also love the idea of the guy as a person, you know, and even not to get weird. But, you know, there's been a lot of stuff in the news about his relationship with his wife, Jada Pinkett Smith, and then her relationship with another person. And then they like have this like a Facebook show where they were talking it out kind of in public. And I didn't watch it, but I have to say, like, that's an impressive that's a radical amount of honesty that I really actually kind of admire. Mm-hmm. So there's just so – I mean, you know, there's so many things about Will Smith that I just find so great. And then also I'm just like, I wish you just would set your own personal bar five spots higher when it comes to Airbnb ads where you're mm-hmm. writing, infantilizing yourself. My Uncle Phil's is a real hard ass.
I said I wasn't going to do this, but if you don't mind, I think I have it queued up, and I wouldn't mind playing a little bit since I set it up, this video. So again, this is Will Smith, DJ Jazzy Jeff, Charlie Mack on the line, and then Snoop joins at some – I'm sorry, Jeffrey. And then at some point, Snoop's on the line here too, so you got all four of them here. And they're busting his chops because they're saying that summertime he's trying to do a Rakim imitation, like Eric B. and Rakim. And he explains that. Let me see if I queue this up to the right place.
That first album y'all dropped.
I'm a prince, and this is my crew.
Oh, yeah. That's very Rakim.
When you was busting the way Jazzy Jeff was cutting that shit, like you say, he was making the precise cuts. He wasn't overdoing it, and it was just... When we made records, we wanted to make records like that. I heard the fucking song Summertime, right? And I'm listening. My ears say... Either Rakim wrote that song, either you and Rakim had a meeting or something.
No, yeah.
Here it is, a groove slightly transformed, just a bit of a break from the norm.
Can you please settle that urban legend? Because people think, and Rakim McLean, that's my guy, but he thinks that you took his cadence. And can you please actually put that to rest?
Absolutely, without question, I was trying to sound like Rakim.
Yeah. That's a one problem with this video is so Will Smith is mic'd up really well, but he's talking to these people on Zoom, and you can tell that he's yelling too loud to cut through to them. But our experience of it with the good recording is Will Smith is just yelling too loud during this. Yeah. But here's a little background on Summertime.
And if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it.
Rakim was my favorite rapper.
I ain't no joke. I used to let the mic smoke. Now I slam it when I'm gonna make sure it's broke.
I had just finished the album, and I was going to the airport, and we had partied all night. So I've been at the club all night. The album's done. It's great. So I'm walking out of the studio. I'm saying goodbye, and they hand me the track. They was like, hey, we just did this one more joint last night, and they handed me the track for Summertime. Fate like crazy. My flight was delayed. So I'm in there, and I was like, let me just mess with it. I was like, ooh, damn, that joint is crazy. And it's the only record I've ever written from beginning to end one time through and didn't go back and change anything. I wrote it from top to bottom, just how it is. But then I went back to try to lay it, and my voice, because I had been out partying all night, I couldn't get my higher voice. And the only way that I could get my voice out is I had to be down in there. So I was like, here it is, a groove, slightly transformed. But it was strictly because my voice was blown out. And then while I was doing it, I was like, oh, I sound like the R. I sound like the R.
Kind of charming, right?
Super charming. And I'm unsurprised to hear just how charming he is, because I do think he's that person, you know? I just think the hat was a step too far. if you ask me, why did you? I think part of it too this is where these kinds of conversations become like they become a surreal exercise in my delusion of where I fit in the entertainment pantheon, right? But like, no one's ever going to confuse me with Will Smith on any level. Mm. But like, for me, my level of embarrassment around doing something that I think is corny. Mm-hmm. Is so huge because of my insecurity that I will do something for not very much money if I think it's good or there's some prestige to it or I feel good about the people I'm working with. There are things that, I mean, the only time I ever turn anything down is if I think it's going to make me look corny.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only, and I'm, we're that. Not talking, we're not mm-hmm. talking about Airbnb coming to me and saying, here's $1 million to just like let us write an Instagram story for you and put it on your page. You know what I mean? And you're right. That's like the lowest impact possible on Will Smith's life and a bunch of money that he can probably donate to his foundation, right? I'm sure he's mm-hmm. doing great things around the world. It's probably notable in my own life that literally the only thing I have standards about is if I think I'm going to be embarrassed later or if I think I'm going to look foolish, then I will. Like, I have that's the only time I've ever turned anything down, whether it's like an ad read or, I mean, not even on our show as much as like if I was approached to do the voiceover for a commercial and I felt like it was going to be silly. Or I don't know, be in some industrial video for a product that I thought would be embarrassing. That's the only standards I have, and they just relate to my own insecurity, honestly. Mm-hmm.
But I'm well, as I said before, boundaries are good, and if those are your boundaries, I understand why you stick to them. That's very relatable to me. Like, the worst thing is doing something that's out there forever that you're embarrassed by. Like, you know, you can't shake that.
I already got 3,250 of those things floating around. They're called TBTL episodes.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
Before I forget, Can we go out with a Rakim song?
Yes, we can. Do you have one in particular?
Probably like It's Been a Long Time off of this album, The 18th Letter. It's kind of later for him. It's like it's not him and Eric B. It's his like solo stuff. But I just – this album, The 18th Letter, was – I don't know, college or something for me. I just listen to it all the time. And
okay,
also,
good.
I think It's Been a Long Time doesn't have too many swears in it, who I remember.
No, it's not marked as explicit at all. It is from
really
1996.
Move. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, by the way, other than you, I think maybe playing something off of this for me once before, I'm very unfamiliar with his stuff without Eric B. And also, I had Getting Jiggy With It queued up. So
listeners.
What I had was the Wild Wild West. I couldn't go with Getting Jiggy With It, but I had Wild Wild West queued up. So this is slightly less steampunky for sure. Okay, here's the deal, Luke. I have an email that I could read. Frankly, I was just trying to scan it here on the fly, but I don't know if you want to save this for tomorrow, but is Luke getting roasted by his former therapist is on the show sheet. And did you talk about that? And I've already forgotten the beginning of the show. Because I'd like to know what's going on there.
That also involves an email, so technically it could fall in the email segment. I would say that we hang on to that for tomorrow, but I have an email here that came in from Maria Alicia.
That's exactly what I was going to read. Okay, got it.
About dishwasher talk.
Yes,
so if you want to read that one, I think this is a very charming email on about four different levels.
Yes. There's part of it, though, I have questions about because I'm not entirely – I don't think my dishwasher might work the same way. But, of course, you and I were talking about dishwashers yesterday because, you know, we're a popular podcast where we talk about the issues that matter. And we were talking about why
the dishes that matter.
The dishes. Oh, the dishes that matter.
I'm going to write down.
Please do. The dishes of our day. Anyway, you and I were saying how – dishwashers are convenient. We
taking
hate,
on the tough dishes.
I like that. We hate unloading them so much. And Maria Alicia says, I had my husband listen to today's episode. I've slowly been trying to convert him to a 10. After listening, he confirmed what I already knew. He and Andrew are the same person. He told me I needed to write to you guys with all of his thoughts. Please don't make me explain why I have to write this email instead of him. Let's just say he's a bit of an introvert. His thoughts are as follows. Quote, they forgot one thing, the Rinse Aid refill light. Write to them and tell them your husband, who is a 15 or a 12 or whatever you call them, has some ideas. Yeah. I just can't be an 11 because I'm a Bulls fan, and that was Isaiah Thomas's number.
I completely and totally scan with that, like not wanting to be a number because you associate it with your like rival player in some sport. Those are the kinds of rules I live my life by as well.
Who did Isaiah Thomas play for?
The Pistons.
I see.
So that was a major rivalry for the Bulls in those days.
Okay, good.
You know that the other Isaiah Thomas, who played for the University of Washington, he was from Tacoma, played for the University of Washington, and has played on a bunch of teams in the NBA and really had some pretty great seasons there for a little bit of a window. He is named Isaiah Thomas because his dad lost a bet. His dad did not like Isaiah Thomas. His dad lost a bet, and the bet was you have to name your kid Isaiah Thomas. So Isaiah Thomas, the Husky, has the name of Isaiah Thomas, the one-time Detroit Piston, over a lost bet.
What does Isaiah Thomas's mom feel about that? Like, do you have
apparently
to get both
she's
parents
very
on
go
board?
Along, get along. Like, yeah, imagine coming home apparently. Being like, "Honey, I lost a bet. Our kid's name is going to be Dookie Stinkington." All right, cool. Well, you lost a bet. I mean, we've got to abide by that bet you just lost down at the bar with your friend.
I know, maybe unless she was there for the beginning of the bet. I mean, maybe, but I kind of
maybe
doubt
maybe
it.
She maybe he lost the bet with her. Like she was the
that
one. She's
something.
A big Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, sorry about my delayed reaction. I'm going to read here because I can barely. We're having some connection issues that the listeners won't be able to hear, but I can barely hear what you're saying down the line. So I'm going to read this email, and hopefully those things will clear up by the time I get to the end of it. So again, this is Maria Alicia's husband writing into us, or 10 or 11 writing into us, but we can't call him an 11. And he says that we forgot about the rinse aid refill light. Says right after you've loaded the dishwasher and get ready to hit start and go to bed, the stupid rinse aid refill light comes on. So you have to open the stupid door again, and it's impossible to pour the rinse aid in without getting it everywhere. You are filling it, and then suddenly you are overfilling it, and it's spewing like Old Faithful. Luke, do you have any connection to this at all? I don't have that light. I don't think I have that thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that function is. It might be a Midwest. I'm looking at Maria Alicia's auto signature, and she mentions being in the Midwest suburbs. Maybe that's a Midwest suburbs setting on the dishwasher, but I don't think I know what that is.
Or it might be like, I don't have a fancy dishwasher. My dishwasher is pretty bare bones, but it's also new. So I wonder if it's a newer technology that eliminates that rinse aid refill light. But okay, here is the not 11's second point. I could go to bed without refilling the rinse aid, but one, it would bother me. And two, I notice it adds 10 minutes to the wash time, which would bother me even more. And three, I would have to confront this problem again tomorrow night when I forget about it right as I'm starting to get ready for bed again. Maria Alicia says, these are attempts at full quotes, but no joke, the dishwasher was running as he was giving me his thoughts, and it made it kind of hard to hear.
I love this. I love that we're just beamed right into their world in the kitchen as he's dictating to her what that she should send to this podcast that he clearly has kind of only limited interest in. I'm wondering if the rinse aid refill is that some separate reservoir of water that you need to put in so that it is for the rinsing of the dishes. Now, you'd wonder why that wouldn't just go through whatever the hose is that's feeding the water into the dishwasher. I've never heard of needing to add extra, you know, but maybe that's just a separate sort of reservoir. The design of that dishwasher is such that you've got to add water to it.
My guess is rinse aid. I'm going to try to look this up on the fly, but here's my guess. You know how like you have the option of putting fabric softener in a washing machine, but it's in like a slightly different slot, and you might even put it in during a different part of the process? My guess is rinse aid is something that you buy that is something like that, only instead of being fabric softener, it probably prevents spots being left on the glasses and dishes. And so it must be
exactly right.
Some dishwashers, you must have to add that at a specific time in the cycle. You can't just load it up ahead of time.
Which is also weird. You'd think that they would just fix this because, if you if you go online, there's all these basically little websites about how to do rinse aid. Make sure the dishwasher door is fully open. Mm. Turn the dispenser knob to open or refill and lift it out. Pour rinse aid into the opening until the indicator points to full. Take care to not overfill. Clean up any spilled rinse aid with a damp cloth. So clearly, Maria Alicia's husband is an Andrew Walsh type in that he doesn't like that little reservoir being low.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it just feels like, you know, it's... Can I mention another... I think I might have said this on the show a while ago, but when I was gunk-holing with my buddy Evan, I told him about this, and it really changed his life. The idea of putting multiple garbage bags in the bottom of the kitchen garbage. I talked about this on the show, right?
Is it so that they're there waiting for you the next time you need to put a bag in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't know why. I mean, the overall labor expended has to be the same, right? I mean, there's no getting around it. You could just get a new bag out each time and put it in when you take the garbage out. But what I remember from, like, you know, being in hotels and sometimes taking the garbage bag out to use for, like, dirty clothes if they don't have a dedicated bag for that, they'll always have a bunch of other garbage bags under, you know, in the can already. So I started doing that here at Burbank Springs. So I'll take like two or three because, by the way, they're very flat. They don't take up any room when they're just, you know, in their unopened state, if you will. I throw down like two or three garbage bags. Then I take the fourth one out or the third one, do that whole thing where you shake it out, fill it up with air, put it in the container. And there is just something that is, I don't know why, it just makes my life feel more manageable when I take the garbage bag out of there and there is another one ready to go, and then I just use that one. I don't know why, it's just a psychological game, but I love it.
Amen. I'm with you. I used to do that. I'm not doing that right now because I had a stinky garbage can issue. I'd cleaned it out.
Stinky.
Like, actually, I think you and I talked about it on the show. It was probably last summer. There's a photo of me like crawling into the garbage can like a goofball after I'd cleaned it out just for comedic purposes. I don't know if that rings a bell to you at all. But I remember I had a stinky garbage can and then I cleaned it all out. And then I was reading like, you know, tips to prevent your garbage can from getting stinky again. And one of the tips was to put some balled up newspaper down there. And then on the off chance that maybe some garbage juices leak into it, it'll be collected by the newspaper. Then you can throw that newspaper out, replace it every couple of weeks. And then it keeps your garbage can smelling a little bit better. So I do that now, and so I don't double up with the garbage cans and
right.
or the garbage bags and the newspaper. But I'm definitely with you on it. It's those small things that do I have to walk just slightly across the room to go grab a bag, a plastic bag from the garbage bag roll? No, they're right here waiting for me. It just makes life a little bit easier and makes you more willing to do small tasks like taking out the garbage.
Speaking of which, oh, by the way, I want to just wrap up the rest of Maria Alicia's email. She signs it sincerely, Maria Alicia, a black Midwest suburban working mom type. And then P.S., I got the pin today from the TBTL-a-thon, and I was so excited. I ran to show my husband. I think he was expecting more because his response was, oh, two white guys in a boat. He's part white, so it's okay for him to say that. and then Maria... Yeah. Maria Alicia signs it Soli Deo Gloria.
What does that mean?
Glory to the sun?
Glory to God alone.
Really? Solo Deo Gloria?
Glory to God alone. It has been used by artists like Johann Sebastian Bach, Handel, Graupner, I don't know who that is, to signify that the work was produced for the sake of praising God. This is like AMDG that we used to put in the top of our homework and all tests and quizzes in Jesuit school. AMDG was for the greater glory of God.
Oh, wow. We had a student when I was in second grade at Bagley, and we used to say the Pledge of Allegiance every morning. We had a student who showed up, and she was, I don't know if she was really Catholic or just from a very pro-life family. I was from a very pro-life family, but I had never seen this move. We would finish the Pledge of Allegiance, and she would say, born and unborn. This is like second grader would just say this, like tag the Pledge of Allegiance with that. And I don't even know what I didn't know what she was talking about at the time. And now, of course, I understand it more clearly as to what the messaging there was. But I was going to say, speaking of those little time saving things that for some reason just really do make your life better. listener, our friend Jamie in Mississippi, was checking in on the unloading of dishwashers. You know, Andrew, we really do take on the tough issues.
Yes, we do.
On this show. I'm just trying to use it in a sentence to see if it works.
I like it. That's the best we got.
Tackling the dishes. The dishes of our day. Tackling the dishes of our day.
Of our time. Tackling the tough issues of our time.
The tough dishes?
Did I say issues and meant dishes?
Yeah. So listener Jamie is checking in on the... Because I said yesterday, like, for whatever... I hate unloading the dishwasher. You do too, Andrew. I just... I find that job, that task, to be so tedious. But if you really think about it, it does not take that much time. And in my mind, it seems like this will, like, block out the afternoon. The dishwasher needs unloading. And it's like, it's not that involved. Jamie said, I always dreaded it too, but once I decided to do the timer trick, and it only takes a short amount of time. To my astonishment, I cleared the dishwasher routinely in 3-ish minutes. I would have sworn it took 10 to 15 minutes. I still give myself 3 minutes, and of course I'll do the extra minute or two, but there aren't many days I can't commit to that amount of time. 3 is hustling, 5 is puttering.
This is so interesting. I skipped this email because I was reading it while we were talking before, and I didn't take it in right. And I thought she was saying that she thought it only took 10 to 15 minutes, but it actually took 30 minutes. And I was like, well, that sounds even worse. I kind of didn't miss – okay, it takes 3-ish minutes. Yeah, no, that's right. That doesn't surprise me that much. It's the type of thing, though, because it feels longer, and that's what's important. It's like the dishwasher wind chill factor, time chill factor. I don't know what you want to call it. But, like, yeah, it might only be 3 minutes, but it feels like 30, and that's what's important.
But I think there's something actually very instructive to the feedback Jamie's offering, which is if I were to take – you know, Andrew, I'm surrounded by clocks here in the broadcast center – if I were to take even one of these clocks and walk it into the kitchen and put it on the windowsill and then time myself, which maybe I could even do that as a Hey Dummies video or something at some point, time myself doing the unloading the dishwasher or really doing any of a number of tasks that I dread unnecessarily. Folding laundry could be one of them. I don't love folding laundry. Again, in my mind, it takes forever. I bet if we started timing more of these things, we would find that they are so much less time-consuming than we think they are, and that might actually trick your brain into dreading them less.
Well, that's very relevant to something that happened to me this morning. I'm not going to lie to you, Lou, because I'm going to start telling the truth to you a lot more. I've just been lying too much, so I'm not going to lie to you here. I got off to a pretty late start this morning. We dial up at 9 a.m., and I got out of bed a little bit after 8, and that's not great math for me. And then I was puttering around, and I was just moving really slowly today. And around 8:30, I was in the kitchen. I was like, I got to make some coffee. And I had left tons of dishes from the night – not tons, but a healthy amount of dishes in the sink from the night before, which would be last night. And I looked at them and I said, I don't have time for this now. I knew I had to do some pre-production work. And I was like, but I can't leave them. I can't leave them. I'm going to make this coffee and I'm going to do these dishes and then I'll just deal with my time however I have to deal with it. If I'm late, I'm late or whatever. I just had to deal with this stuff. So I dig into the dishes. I make the coffee and I'm doing the dishes and I'm listening to the radio and not thinking too much about it. And then I get done with all the dishes, which felt like a decent amount of work. I felt like I was way more awake after doing this. I felt like it was a project that was completed. And I looked over at the clock and it was 8:38. It had taken just over 5 minutes or just under 10 minutes, depending how you want to look at it, to do what felt like a chore. And I don't even dislike washing dishes that much, as I mentioned yesterday on the show. But it is funny how these things that feel like big projects are just not that big of projects. It took me 8 minutes to clean a sink full of dishes. And I clean them well, by the way.
Yeah, I believe that. I have a feeling that there are a lot of – time is relative, right? And I have a feeling that there are a lot of things that we dread doing. I mean, even going on a jog, to take it back to the workout stuff. Oh, let me ask you this, Andrew. If I were ever to put out a tweet – I wondered about this, if this would be me in a roundabout way also stealing your joke. I've been listening to the War on Drugs on my jogs now. Mm-hmm. I just cycle into different for a while. It was Tycho, this band that does sort of instrumental music. Sometimes it'll be Tame Impala. Sometimes it'll be War on Drugs. Anyway, I wanted to make a joke that, like, don't think of this jog as 3 miles. Think of it as 1.5 War on Drugs songs.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of, you have a one time expressed like that sometimes those songs can be a little long for you. And then I've run with that as I tend to. And I like anytime it comes up, I remind you that you don't like that band because the songs are too long, which I don't think is even true. If I were to write that tweet, am I kind of borrowing your joke? Am I borrowing your premise?
Let me answer that question with another question. How much money do you have in your wallet right now? Actual paper money?
Probably 12 or 15 bucks. It's in the other room.
Okay, give me 12 or 15 bucks and you can tweet it out. How's that sound?
That's it?
But I don't want you Venmoing
it to me. What if I would have had $1?
I want you to hand me 12. I would have taken it. I just want you to hand me the
paper. I have $1 in my wallet.
Okay, give me, next time you see me, you're going to hand me $1, and then I'm going to be officially your lawyer.
I have a child support. I have a paternity case in my wallet.
I pay you with debtors. I have debtors bills in my wallet. Yes.
Yeah, great. okay, so in other words, you don't care. You don't feel like I'm stealing.
I don't think that was ever a joke of mine. Yeah, I mean,
it wasn't a joke. It was an observation that you made.
Yeah, that the band. It was a different type of music than I thought it was going to be at the time. But no, I don't think that is stealing my joke.
All right,
but now are you going to tweet it out? Like now that you've talked about it, is that kind of like?
What happens is when I'm on these jogs, I go through. There's stages. The first stage is like, oh, this feels great. When I'm running down my actual street, I have a lot of energy. I try to time it with the music, like depending on the playlist I'm listening to. Like I listen to this one song called For the Ages by Craft Spells. That's one of my playlists. And I want to be in front of my neighbor Doris's house by the time this like one piece of the music kicks in. Mm-hmm. By the way, everything's going fine. My brain is not at all tied up in rituals. And so I'm feeling good.
How's Doris doing is what I want to know.
She's hanging in there, man.
Good.
She's like 95 or 96 now.
Not a lot of young people named Doris, which I wonder if we're going to see a correction on that. Because usually these things are very cyclical, right? That's a really pretty name, but it's always associated with an older person.
Yeah. So phase one, I'm feeling kind of good. Then I go up a slight hill. And then I'm kind of like... That's usually the point where I get an early indication if this is going to be a good run or a bad run. And if it's going to be a good run, I feel fine. I go over the hill. Everything's good. If I'm very tired from that part of the run, I know it's going to be probably a sort of a bad run. And then I go through this assessment phase, and then I go through I think about work stuff. I think about like, what do I have to do today? What's the most efficient way to try to handle this? If there's an open question, like for Livewire, like I'm answering an audience question for myself, I try to come up with an answer for that maybe. And then there is the point where I start to daydream for a little while. If I'm lucky, there's a lot of daydreaming because then I'm really not thinking about the jog. Then I'm just kind of like off in my mind. And then there's the part where I think about tweets. And I compose tweets in my brain. And they're usually something I saw on the street, like somebody I jogged by was doing something or, you know. And so I like a week ago, this stupid war on drugs tweet idea started to creep into my brain. And until I get the poison out by tweeting it, it will constantly be in my mind as I'm jogging until I put it out on Twitter and receive what I assume will be limited engagement.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you're not somebody who ever messed around with like the draft thing, right? I feel like that's an iPhone user thing. There must be a pretty accessible like kind of draft notes function on your guys' phones, and then every now and then somebody will tweet out, these are all my unsaved or my saved drafts of things I didn't tweet out, and they're often like kind of maybe surreal things that somebody thought in the middle of the night or the like.
I'm looking at some drafts I have right now. This we should do this, by the way, down the road at some point. Just go, because you have it too. It's in Twitter. It's I don't think it's a operating system specific, right?
Oh, I don't know. I think the things I'm sort of picturing is like the notes section of a screen cap of like of a iPhone, but maybe there's a draft thing too. But I don't really do that actually. If there's something I need to remember, I email it to myself so that my Gmail kind of has a bunch of just like floating emails that maybe the subject line is a reminder to do this or an idea of that. But yeah, I don't have like a draft folder.
I have a bunch of I'm looking at some of these drafts from Twitter, and this is great that these didn't go out to the world.
Oh, I want to do this. Can we do it tomorrow?
Yeah.
Embarrassing?
No, I just have to talk also about how my therapist is possibly negging me.
I'd like to hear that.
I'm going to read you an actual, I'm going to violate all kinds of HIPAA rules. I think I'm allowed to violate them as the patient. And I want to, and I'm going to reveal something in an email, and I'm going to ask you if it was, if I'm overreacting or if I'm reading into it too much. So let's do all of that tomorrow. In the meantime, do you happen to have that Rakim song?
Yeah, I have the
queued up. It's been a long time off of the 18 letter. All right. We're going to go out with this. We're going to say thank you for listening. And we're going to remind you that we'll be back here tomorrow with more imaginary radio for you. So please do join us for that. Until then, stay safe. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Follow procedures. The crowd couldn't wait to see this. Nobody been much longer waited since Jesus. Who wouldn't believe this? I heard the word on the street is I'm still one of the deepest on the mic since Adidas. They said I changed the times from the rhymes that I thought of. So I made some order, put the new world in order with mathematics. Put your status above the average and help your rappers make paragraphs with graphics. Cause new days is dawning, new ways of performing. Brainstorming, I write and watch the night turn the morning on and on. And I got the whole world was spawning. Rock, I keep it hot, blow the spot without warning. The emperor, well known for inventing a sentence full of adventure, turning up the temperature, rush with adrenaline. How long has it been again to be in the state of mind that Rakim is in?
It's been a long time. Rakim, the microphone solo whisk. It's been a long time. It's been a long time. Rakim.
When I'm out propping, either hanging or shopping, people see me stopping, ask me when the album dropping. The wait is over, in formation like a soldier, like I told you, greater, stronger. Now that I'm older, I broke the code of silence with overloads of talents. My only challenge is not to explode in violence. I'm Asiatic, emblazing microphones, a habit at least once.
Power out.